The quarterback position at Florida State has been, well, nothing short of a roller coaster ride over the last about 3 years, from the highest of highs to the emotional pain of losing Jordan Travis to the dumpster fire of 2024 to the what was 2025. Michael, it has been a crazy situation, and it feels like we might have buckled up for another season of what are we doing here at quarterback in 2026, but can Ashton Daniels prove the doubters wrong? And we dug into a lot of film, a lot of numbers. We're going to dive deep into the quarterback position because, Michael, we are, what did you tell me earlier, about 60-something days? We are only
64.
We are only a few Saturdays away from college football being here. So it's time to start rolling out preseason content, and we're going to start with our position group previews, and today being quarterback, which is obviously going to be one of the biggest, most important in-depth previews of the season. So summertime's here, man. It is hotter than Mike Norvell's seat outside right now. And so time to get on to this preseason stuff. But, man, I'll say this and I'll throw it back to you. I'm actually excited about this episode, right? Because I'll be the first to admit, I was not super high on Ashton Daniels when they took him out of the portal. I was like, kind of, what are we doing here? We're kind of rolling out the same thing again, you know, that we did in 24 and 25. But then I started digging into it. I'm like, you know what? I can see a path to him being better than what we've had the last 2 years. Now, I know that's not hard to do, but there's a few things that I'm interested to talk about in this episode. And I know we were talking before the show, and we've kind of found a couple of the same nuggets. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode as well. So with that being said, what's up, No Nation? We are the guys from Plant the Spear. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. And we appreciate you tuning in. And Michael, man, ready to dig into the quarterbacks in this one.
Yeah, man, looking 64 days till the season, you know, to steal one of your famous lines, we are a bug to a bug zapper.
Yeah,
we were depressed all summer. We were down. But you know what? Now that we're only a few Saturdays away, we're already back into it. We're already getting excited. And I'm excited to look at Ashton Daniels as the quarterback of Florida State. Yes, he wasn't any of our top choices. He probably wasn't even on any of our radars. You know, we saw what we saw against where he was at Stanford and Auburn, but now he's here. So we're going to dig into and figure out what is his strengths, what are his weaknesses, and what we hope to see from this season as he leads FSU, hopefully back to at least a bowl game.
Yeah, exactly. And really, you know, that's the thing with Ashton Daniels, and we'll get into all this later, but man, I mentioned it on the last episode, like you don't have to win the race, right? Driving the car around everybody. You just have to not crash it, because there's enough around him that I feel like if he can just be good enough, he can get Florida State to maybe not where we want to be, but at least where we need to be this year, right? And so that's what really we're going to be focusing on today. And to be honest, man, the expectations aren't super high, right? CBS and their preseason rankings had him at 12th in the ACC alone. We just saw Phil Steele last week that we talked about on that episode, which was a great episode. I think you guys should go back and check that out if you haven't seen it. He had him tied for 10th. So the expectations in the ACC alone are not super high. Now, I'm not going to sit here in front and tell you that I think Ashton Daniels is going to be one of the top five quarterbacks, the best quarterback, top three, top five, anything like that in the ACC. But there's a lot of reasons I think he can be better than people are thinking. There's a lot of reasons I think we might be wrong about what Ashton Daniels can be in the right situation. And so let's dive right on into that. Now, before we do that, I'm going to bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, which is, of course, Alumni Hall FSU. These guys have been rocking with us for some years. Again, it's almost time for the season, so it's time to get you some new gear. And look, man, they got everything you need for game day: hats, shirts, stickers, flags, everything that you need. Make sure you check them out. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. If you're in Tallahassee or shopping local, 1415 Timber Lane Road is the location. If you want to shop online, have it shipped to your front door, you can do that at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. And while you're there, make sure that you save 10% with code SPEAR. Make sure that you sign up for their Hall Pass rewards. Look, it's free money, free savings, so you might as well take advantage of it. That's 10% with code SPEAR. So thank you guys so much for supporting them, and we appreciate Alumni Hall sponsoring this episode. So, Michael, let's get into these quarterbacks, man. Let's talk about this. Of course, we're going to start and focus 90% of our attention on Ashton Daniels. He is the starter. It was just named, depending on whenever you're watching this, it was just named this week that he's going to be attending ACC Media Days as a representative for Florida State in Charlotte. We'll be there. Can't wait to talk to Ashton himself. I got a list of questions for him already that I'm looking forward to, and maybe not talking to Mike Norvell so much anymore. I think I'm going to focus on the players this year. But, man, that pretty much puts to rest any kind of quarterback competition, right? It's going to be Ashton Daniels until it's not. And so we're going to focus most of our attention on him, but we are going to talk about the other guys in the room because there is potential that through whether it's injury or things go sideways that they might play. So we're going to focus on, we're going to talk about everybody. But again, the hyper focus is going to be on Ashton Daniels. Now, I do want to say one thing, Michael. You know, I was looking at over a lot of these numbers for what we're going to talk about today, and there was one that really stood out, and that is that over half of our viewers are not subscribed. And so if you enjoy our content,
come on now,
go ahead and hit that subscribe button, right? It doesn't cost you anything, doesn't sign you up for anything. It's free to do. And we are so close to hitting that 3,000 mark, which we've been chasing for a good little while here. So if you guys could help us push past that 3,000 number, we are less than 100 away. We would greatly, greatly appreciate that because you guys are as much a part of the show as we are, and you're why we do it. So let's get into the quarterbacks here, starting with Ashton Daniels. We're going to do some overall thoughts, some big picture, and then we're going to get into a bunch of the other details. I promise you, if you guys know Vintage Plant the Spear, like we did on last episode, you're going to really like this one because we are going to leave no stone unturned on this quarterback position. So starting with Ashton Daniels, he is a redshirt senior. He did actually redshirt at Auburn last year. Yep. That's why they held him out of the Mercer game, I think was the cupcake later in the year, so he could preserve his redshirt. A big guy, 6'2", 230. I like that, a big durable frame there because he's going to need to run the ball a lot. So that's a really important thing there. Very experienced, not all good experience, but he's got a lot of experience. 23 Power 4 starts, 37 total game appearances. Career numbers, his average completion percentage is sitting around 60%. 4,783 total yards passing, 24 touchdowns, 22 interceptions, which is the number that we all focus on that make you a little bit nervous. 346 career carries, 1,401 yards, and 11 rushing touchdowns. Now, Michael, I know we both kind of did this. I've done a ton of digging into his numbers. I know I went back and watched the Kentucky game, every single snap that he took. The Vandy game was the same way. Alabama, I could only find the condensed version, so I watched all of that. I also went back and watched some time at Stanford. I watched him play Clemson in 2024 because I wanted to see the good. I wanted to see the bad. I wanted to see what things looked like at Stanford, why he was better at Auburn, what are some of the things that changed there. So I know you did too. We watched a lot of the same games, and so we're going to talk a lot about that. But, man, let's start really with the big picture of who Ashton Daniels is, kind of what he brings to the table, and then we'll get into the nitty-gritty here. So, man, I'm just going to start. Let's keep it real, right? He's not been a great passer throughout his career. It is what it is. There's no way around it. And he's got a turnover problem.
Correct.
That is the one thing that makes us the most nervous. But in fairness, he did show considerable improvement at Auburn last year. And when you turn on the film, it's pretty obvious. And so I think it really, you know, that Stanford history is still haunts him, right? Those numbers are still there. That's what a lot of people kind of look at. This is who he is, right? And at some point after so many snaps, it is who you are.
Right.
But, you know, if you just focus on the glimpses of what we saw last year at Auburn, there is reason for hope. I do think that. I do feel confident in that. And, you know, we'll get into that later when we start talking about what we saw. But, I mean, for everything he's lacked as a passer, he makes up for as a runner. And so I think you have to look at Ashton Daniels as the complete package, as a dual threat. You're not really just taking him for his arm. You're taking him for kind of every his entire skill set. And now coming into this year at Florida State, he's an experienced veteran dual threat guy. In his final year of eligibility, he's not exactly been successful. But, man, at the end of the day, he has played in the ACC. He has played in the SEC. The level of competition, the big game environments and things like that, they're not new to him. Right. It's not like he's transitioning from the G5 where he's going to be like shell-shocked by, you know, playing at a big stadium in front of 80, 90,000 people or anything like that. His assistant quarterback coach from Auburn, who he credited with a lot of his development last year, came to FSU with him, Jesse Stone. So I think that should help too. And man, again, I'll admit, like, I was pretty down on this take in my immediate reaction because I was like, man, we just took DJU, kind of a guy who was broken at other programs and got ran out of a bunch of places, and oh, well, we'll make him better here. And it didn't turn out well. We did the same thing with Tommy after that, a guy who kind of, you know, wandered around a little bit, kind of knew what he was, tried to make him something he wasn't, and he turned out that's who he was.
Right.
And so I was pretty down on this because I was like, man, we're going to do this again, knowing it didn't work the last 2 years. But after really, really digging in, I do think there's a chance for him to have a decent season. I'm not saying stellar,
right,
but I think better than what we've seen in the past 2 years when you look at what he brings from a complete package. And now last thing before I throw it back to you is, look, man, he's going to have a lot of weapons around him at the skill positions to work with, right? As long as the offensive line turns out to even be decent, he doesn't have to carry this team on his back. To me, you know, like I said in the last show, as long as you don't crash the car, you don't have to try and win the race by yourself, man. There's right. going to be enough around him that if he can just do his part, I think Florida State can have a better than expected season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, we're Florida State fans first and foremost. And so every year we're going to find ourselves somewhere along the line convincing ourselves that this might be the guy to help turn it around. Okay. So just give us a little break here.
Dude, I did a whole episode on why FSU could win with DJU, and I should probably go delete that from the channel.
Exactly. Exactly. And then we did episodes of why we thought Tommy could be the thing that actually got us over the board. That it finally. So what we're saying about Ashton Daniels is we're not saying he's the guy that's going to take us to the national championship.
No.
Though if he did, he would that legend would be incredible.
Build a statue.
Build a statue right then and there. What we are saying, though, is while we both you and I were not in favor of this pickup, obviously we saw the quarterbacks that they had brought in during the transfer portal season. We saw what they were looking at. We also, you know, whether you believe the numbers or not, knew what they were kind of working with as far as NIL dollars and rev share dollars to try to go get a quarterback. By the way, those numbers out there that are saying he's making $1.2 million are false. Don't believe them. Okay, he's not making that much money. This is the kind of quarterback, though, that if everything hits, and I know that's a big if, but if everything hits, he has the type of body, the type of skill set running-wise, and enough of a passing acumen that Mike Norvell could actually set this offensive up to be a really good, I'm not going to say elite, but a really good scoring offense. The body size, Mike Norvell likes to run his quarterbacks in his type of offense. The problem with DJU when we look back on that is that he was injured and he wasn't going to run. Plus, he had the worst offensive line since FSU was a women's college, right?
Yeah.
Then he had Tommy Castellanos, who all he was supposed to be was a runner. He got injured early. Some people suspect after that Alabama game there. And so he was never the same. And Gus Malzahn's offense was so one-dimensional in the sense that you knew what he was going to do, that you could really shut down the run. He wasn't a great passer. It was a deep ball to Deuce. If that wasn't working, there was not really much else to go on. In Mike Norvell's offense, you're going to have a lot more formations, a lot more wide receiver route trees. You're going to have the short passing game, the intermediate passing game. And one of the bigger concerns that Ashton Daniels brought to the table was his deep ball, which I know we'll talk about later. So I think in all those things, when you look at it, if he can stay healthy and if he can make moderate improvements on his throwing, especially the deep ball, then you could see a scenario where FSU has a type of offense that can score and keep up, you know, and keep these games close.
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, even you look back to Auburn last year, they were terrible. But, like, that was a 10-win Vandy team that they took to overtime, I think it was. Alabama was a one-score game. Like, they were in some of those games. And some of those games, they should have won. They honestly, well, I'll talk about this later, but they should have upset Alabama for being honest.
They should have.
But I do think you bring up a really interesting point. Like, one of the key things is going to be keeping him healthy. Because what makes him dangerous is his legs. Like, if he couldn't run like we saw with DJU or Tommy, his arm's not good enough to just be a stand back there, pick you apart quarterback. It is what it is. And I feel like DJU just wasn't good, man. But if he would have been able to run like we saw him do at Clemson, I know that offensive line was bad, but I don't think 2024 would have been quite as bad. You just had a guy who was a statue back there. Right. And it just, that's not, he wasn't a good enough pure passer to be immobile. The same thing we saw with Tommy Castellanos last year. And so that is the one key thing to your point. You definitely have to keep him healthy because you're going to need him to carry the ball over 100 times this year. He's going to have to be a big part of your run game. Now, when we get back into it and look at some of the things, we're going to start kind of with some of his history, some of the things that we've seen, because there are some things that I feel like he needs some grace in, right? Yeah. There are some things that I can give him some credit for. And one of the things that I do want to point out when we talk about his history is that he's not really been in a good position to thrive in, right? Like, yes, he is going to share some of the blame of the things we're about to talk about. Holding the ball too long, making some poor reads, doing some things, happy feet and things like that. That's not on him, right? And I got some numbers that'll back that up. But it is fair to point out that he has not had a lot of help at times, especially when you look back to Stanford. I really think that's the biggest difference between Stanford and Auburn. It's kind of what you had around you, too. The biggest thing that stood out to me when I was doing my research for the show was that he has consistently, and I know he, again, this is the one that he really does kind of share some blame in here, but he has consistently been one of the more pressured quarterbacks in the country behind some pretty bad offensive lines. And when you look at it, so I pulled a bunch of numbers on this. And when we talk about the pressure that he's had to face, when you look at pass block efficiency rankings from PFF, Pro Football Focus, there are, I filtered this down to Power Four. So we're just kind of on the same footing here. There are 68 Power Four teams in these numbers that I pulled. So looking back last year at 2025, Auburn's offensive line out of 68 Power Four teams was ranked 60th in pass block efficiency. Now, remember, that was not all Ashton Daniels. That was Jackson Arnold as well. So that kind of shows that it wasn't all Ashton Daniels that was the problem there. Last year, FSU was tied for 17th. So, like, if you could give him an offensive line that was top 20 in pass blocking versus bottom 10, that's going to be a big difference. That's going to help him out a lot. Now, at Stanford, it was also 60th. And to give you an idea of how bad 60th is, Florida State's offensive line in 2024 was 63rd. And we know, as you said, man, that's the women's college could have blocked better than them boys could have. So, like, that just shows you how bad it was. And then, to make matters worse, in 2023, they were 66 out of 68 teams. So the offensive lines that he's played behind since he's been a quarterback have been dog water, period. Right. And Florida State's in 2023 was tied for 20th. So, again, you can see the difference it's going to make whenever – just look at Florida State. Tied for 20th. You see what they did. Tied for – or 63rd was awful. Tied for 17th. We know that team should have won more games than they did last year.
Right.
Now, when you look at the pressured percentage, he was pressured on 40.9% of his dropbacks last year. That's 10th highest in the Power Four. At Stanford in 24, it's 39.8%. That was 16th highest in Power Four. And in 2023, 45.1, 6th highest. So every single year he's been a quarterback, he has been top 20 to top 10 in the most pressure faced as a quarterback. Now, again, I'm about to get into this. He has a part in that, right? 13 of his 22 interceptions came under pressure, but 9 did not. So he's still got some things he's got to work on. Now, when you look at another stat that PFF has called quarterback-owned pressures, this is, again, the kind of the responsibility that he takes for the amount or for the pressures that they had. In 2024, he was the fourth highest in quarterback-owned pressures at 34%. So he has got to get the ball out faster. A lot of it's on him, right? I will say that. The Auburn offensive line was credited with 64% of the pressures. Now, Jackson Arnold, who also played for Auburn last year in a majority of the games, he was at 20.3%, and the offensive line was credited with 77.2%. So you can see where the offensive line at Auburn wasn't good, but it was a little bit worse under Ashton Daniels. So he's got to work on getting that ball out a little bit quicker. That's something that he has to get better at. So he does own part of this blame. Now, he was a lot better at it at Stanford, 19.8% in 24 and only 9.9% in 23. I think in 23, you know, just being kind of a true sophomore, I think they just kind of had that really get it out quick type of a plan for him. Now, one thing I do want to sidestep on here is I do want to say, I know we're talking about how bad Auburn offensive line was last year, and that's probably going to make some of you nervous because our starting left tackle, Xavier Chaplin, came from Auburn as well. So you're probably thinking, well, this ain't good. But rest assured, he had the lowest pressure percentage allowed on that offensive line at only 8%. So other than the penalties, he was kind of their best offensive line. Now, when you talk about the PFF just team grades out of Power Four, 68 Power Four teams, keep that in mind. Pass blocking, Auburn last year was 52nd in the country and out of 68 Power Four teams. FSU was 11th. At Stanford, they were 54th in 24 and 64th in 23. So, man, the point is he has played behind some pretty bad offensive lines. He has dealt with a lot of pressure. And I don't care if you're Jameis Winston or DJU, playing in under pressure, every quarterback is worse under pressure.
Exactly.
So if you can give him a decent amount of time, man, I mean, that alone could elevate his game quite a bit. And we're going to talk about receivers and stuff like that coming up in just a second. But, man, when you hear the pressure numbers, the offensive lines are in, like, the bottom 10 of the Power Four. He's in the top 10 of the most pressured quarterbacks in the country. Like, man, you can see that plays a really big part. Because, and I'll talk about you on this, but when – you go back and watch his film, a lot of his mistakes are because he's running for his life.
Yes.
And he's just trying to make something happen. So we don't know what this year's offensive line is going to look like because it's going to be five new starters. But when you realize Herb Hand took this offensive line from in pass block efficiency, what is it, 63rd to tied for 17th in his first year, I at least feel confident in saying that he'll probably at least have a respectable offensive line that could at least be top 30 in pass blocking grade, which is a significant improvement from what he's played through or played behind his entire career.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, Herb Hand has shown us the ability to take, you know, bits and pieces from different places and gel them together to provide a decent offensive line. As we've said many times on the show before, until he proves us otherwise, we're going to trust that the offensive line will be at the worst decent enough to have a modicum of success in running the ball and passing. Now, if you go back, I know we're not talking about his film yet, but just to this sense about pressure, if you go back and watch some of his film, a lot of those interceptions and bad throws is that's the fact that, one, he throws off his back foot a lot. He doesn't have a huge hitch. Okay. You know, a lot of quarterbacks, they do like a two, maybe three step drop, and they have a hitch where they go back on that power foot and then forward on the front foot. And that's where they're putting all their power on. Daniels a lot will go back one step, put power on his back step, and then throw off his back step. And I know that's been a thing that they've been working on a lot in the offseason here at Florida State. And I think if you go back and look at a lot of those interceptions, it's because, one, he has all that pressure that's coming into him. And the worst kind of pressure, I mean, Jesse, you played offensive line. I was a running back in high school. They tell you the worst kind of pressure is not pressure coming from the ends. It's coming right up the middle, right? Because you have less than a snap quick time to make a decision. And you go back and look, a lot of that pressure is coming up the middle, which means your center and guards are not very good. And then he's throwing off his back foot into a lot of the danger zones and stuff. Other times, like you said, he's been running for his life. He's trying to make a play. You know, he's not set and he's thrown there. So I'm not saying, again, we're not saying that these turnovers aren't his fault. He made the throw. We're saying that those turnovers and his ability, his propensity to turn over has been predicated and helped by the fact that he has not played behind decent offensive lines. So if he could just see, I mean, a 20 to 30% percentage point improvement over, meaning the pressure rate goes down by that much, I imagine how much better of a passer potentially he could be, Jesse.
Oh, 1,000%. I mean, if you were to put even an average quarterback behind a really good offensive line, he could find some ways to get, you know, let guys get open, do some work, read the defense. But if you put a really good quarterback behind that, say 2024, if you put Jordan or Jameis behind that 24 offensive line, team's still probably barely going to scrape by to make a bowl, right? Exactly. Because anytime you have pressure in your face almost immediately, and when you watch this film, that happened quite a bit,
right?
Or he's throwing the ball with like one hand on a defender, just like you said, kind of poor mechanics, falling back, trying to sling it to make something happen. It's just hard, man. You can look at the best quarterbacks in the country, because PFF, when I pull their numbers, they'll break down like what they do under a clean pocket and what they do under pressure. It's night and day difference, man. And so if you're facing pressure on literally 40% of your dropbacks, that is terrible. I mean, and that's hard to be productive behind. So, again, I'm not saying that some of that's not his fault from holding the ball too long and getting happy feet and things like that. But at the same time, if the offensive line this year doesn't have to be top 10, but if it can be what it was last year or close to it, maybe top 20 in pressure rates and things like that allowed, then, man, I think that alone is going to allow him to have a much better season. Now, one of the other things that I want to touch on, too, is kind of the pieces around you, right? Now, Auburn, man – their talent and production is kind of like Florida State's last year. It just didn't add up. Like, they had Cam Coleman, they had Eric Singleton Jr. They got from Georgia Tech, I think it was. Like, they had some decent receivers, but they were not, they just weren't great. And some of that may have been on the quarterback. And I understand that too, because Jackson Arnold wasn't exactly good either. I mean, he got benched for Ashton Daniels, for goodness sakes. But what I'm looking at here is when you talk about PFF team grades, again, remember 68 Power 4 teams, Auburn's receiving grade last year was 66 out of 68 teams. Wow. They dropped a lot of passes. Florida State's was 33rd. So if you're talking about a receiver room that is 33 spots better already, and that's considering Danzy was still very young, Boggs was hurt, Squirrel White was, you know, hibernating in a tree somewhere for most of the season. Like, if you can have a decent receiver room this year that actually catches the ball, that is going to help as well. And even going back to his time at Stanford, in 24, their receiver grade, team grade, was 59th out of 68. Florida State's was 65th. So we know a thing or two about having some bad receivers. And then in 23, it was Stanford's was 47th and Florida State's was 29th. So again, you can kind of see what I'm talking about here with just surrounding him with better pieces, right? Auburn had better receivers than Stanford did by far from a talent perspective. But they dropped a lot of passes. They dropped 7 passes in the Alabama game alone. He probably would have thrown for over 300 yards on Alabama's defense last year and potentially pulled off the upset had they not have dropped so many daggone passes. And one of them was a crucial turnover that ended a tip ball turnover that ended up it wasn't even Ashton Daniels' fault. It just hit the guy in the hands and he just couldn't bring it in. And then, you know, like, man, at Stanford, he just did not have a lot of talent at receiver that could create separation, especially against the better teams. Like, when I went back and watched that Clemson game in 24, it was just coverage sack here or trying to fit into a tight window there because those receivers just could not get separation. And to me, that was because both offensive lines, as we've defined, were on pretty similar footing, both pretty bad.
Yeah, okay.
But the biggest difference to me between his time at Auburn and his time at Stanford was the receivers could actually get open. Mm. You know, like I admit I'm wrong on this. I was under the false pretense that Stanford was really a more pro-style offense and that just wasn't a good fit for Ashton Daniels, but that's not the case. They were pro-style before Troy Taylor got there. Right. They ran that kind of spread, the modern offense that you see now, similar to what Auburn ran. But, man, when you watch, and, like, again, we're talking about a game against Clemson and a game against Alabama, right? A game against Vanderbilt or something like that, against quality teams. We're not watching games against cupcakes here.
Right.
When you watch him play, like, against a Vandy or Alabama, you would actually see receivers that were open by 2 to 3 yards. In Clemson, in that game with the Stanford receivers, every time he threw the ball, I mean, they are right on top of them. You're having to fit it into a tight window on basically every single route. And I think that alone was the biggest difference between Auburn and Stanford, was just having receivers that can get open. And we know Florida State actually has pretty decent receivers.
Right.
So I think that's something too. And then the other thing that I'll mention, man, before I throw it back to you, before we get into the film here, was that he just also wasn't supported by a good ground game at Stanford either. Like, they were 113th in rush yards per carry in 23 and 106 in 24. Using sack-adjusted yardage, which PFF does, because to me, sacks shouldn't count against a quarterback's running total. That's how the NFL does it. But to make it fair for the quarterback, Ashton Daniels led Stanford in rushing both years that he was there. So, you know, he's not a great passing quarterback, but he had to do almost everything for that team because he had receivers that really couldn't create separation. He had an offensive line that was struggling, and he had a run game that just wasn't very dynamic. And we do know Florida State should have a really good running game this year because they are loaded at running back, point blank period. I don't care whether you believe in Florida State or not. They got some horses in that backfield, which will be the next thing we're going to talk about in our next position preview. But, man, I mean, he does get happy feet probably a little too often. But when you've been pressured that much and you know you're a good runner, that's the probably better part of your game. It kind of makes sense why he does that, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, man, I just really think from looking back, and then we'll get into kind of looking forward with the film and stuff like that. Looking back, I really was just trying to figure out, man, why was he so bad? Like, was it him or was it a product of the environment that he was in and things like that? And when you see the difference that from his time at Stanford to his time at Auburn, just being surrounded by better players and not, you know, the offensive line was still a little bit rough, but man, that was made a big difference. And he also did credit Auburn with doing a lot of development for him as well. So hopefully that builds into this year. We're not excusing everything that he did in his past, because there was a lot of times watching these games where there's going to be some times this year where you're going to go, bro, what are you doing? What was that? But at the same time, you can also pin a lot of that on just what he was around, man, just what he was working with. And that's why this whole section of the show was dedicated to, look, man, he's been behind a bad offensive line his entire career. He's not had really dynamic receivers, and he's never really been supported by a great run game. And the closest he got to that was at Auburn, and we just said that he made a pretty significant improvement last year.
Yeah, he did. I mean, when I'm not trying to offend Stanford. They did beat FSU last year.
Yeah.
But the program has historically, outside of a couple years with Jim Harbaugh as head coach, you know, has David Shaw, hasn't been that great of a football development program, right? Mm-hmm. So while he was there, I mean, he – you know, you go back and look at some of the highlights. He had some good moments, good passes, but he's constantly running around. He's got pressure in his face pretty quickly most of the time. And so, yeah, of course, you're going to have those kinds of mistakes. I mean, he was throwing an interception in his second year, because his first year, he only had like six passes, I believe, or something like that in his first year. But in his second year, he had eight interceptions. That he was out of 325 passes, I believe. And so that means he had thrown interceptions on 2% of his passes. But then that next year, he jumps up to 12 interceptions, but he only had 271 passes. So he obviously jumps up to 4% of his passes. Well, he goes to Auburn, he has 119 passes, and he only throws two interceptions. Now, again, he only throws three touchdowns in that same thing, but you could see that he's starting to make better decisions over time. And so I think with the level of talent being improved, the level of development being improved, the hope is that because he brought his guy over from Auburn with him, that improvement gets better. Mike Norvell, also, who is a used to be quarterback whisperer. Yeah. Hopefully Mike Norvell finds his magic back. And now you see a minor come of improvement over time to where he doesn't put the ball in danger more. He doesn't hold on to the ball anymore. He's actually making the throws off his power foot instead of his back foot, right? That his hitch is cleaned up better, that he has a better hitch time, he has a better timing, that the wide receivers. Also, like you just said, man, we're going to lean a lot on this run game. So it's not like he has to be the hero. He just has to not be the villain.
Yeah, and I need Mike Norvell to stop whispering to quarterbacks and start yelling at the quarterbacks or something, because we got to figure something out. Exactly. But no, I mean, you're 100% right, man. And that's the thing. And really, even, and I'll touch on this again later, but even the two interceptions last year were not on him.
Right.
One of those was a 4th-and-20 Hail Mary at the end of the game that, you know, those just happened. And another was a tip ball that wasn't on him.
Right.
So he did get a lot better. But again, I'll save that for later, because we're going to touch on that in a minute. But let's go, and I do want to back up and say one thing that you reminded me of before. When we talk about the initial take, it was kind of like, okay, I don't love this take, but it makes sense in Gus Malzahn's offense.
Right, right.
When you're going to run the quarterback 150 times a year. When it was Mike Norvell's offense, it was like, because he's had the most success that he's had at Florida State with a mobile quarterback in Jordan Travis, but he typically uses more of a pocket passing type of quarterback. So I was kind of like, man, I just don't know that I love this take in his offense. But again, if you can lean so heavily on that run game where he just has to do enough, I think he can be successful. And so let's get into the reasons why I think he can be successful when we talk about the film study and what we went back and watched. And really, I'm going to start with the highlights. And that was the Auburn versus Vanderbilt game last year. Son, when I tell you, I know Auburn ended up losing the game, but whoever their defensive coordinator is probably still has nightmares about Ashton Daniels. He tore them boys up. And so when I'm watching this game, man, like, he started that Vanderbilt game 20 of 24 for 228 yards and a touchdown with 42 rushing yards through 2.5 quarters before he made his first bad pass. And, you know, when I'm talking about a bad pass, I'm not talking about, you know, pressure immediately in your face and you're throwing it into the stands. I'm not talking about one that was a drop. I'm not talking about one that got batted down, which happened in that game. I'm talking about one where it was like, oh, why did you throw that? And the first one that I saw was like, that was almost a pick six. You got lucky on that. So there's going to be those, right? But I mean, again, when you're starting a game that hot, like and really watching the whole game, man, I really only saw two, maybe three bad passes that were on him the entire game. And one of those, it was a high pass, but it still hit the receiver in the hands. He made one bad pass the entire game, maybe two that I saw in the entire game against Vanderbilt. And, you know, because like I said, I don't put some of those things on the quarterback, the drops, the throwaways and things like that. There was also one that was a blown PI call that he should have got on a pretty good jump ball, which you're going to see a lot of to Deuce this year. And so, you know, man, those are the things that I don't really put on the quarterback. But he also had a 51-yard rushing touchdown called back in that game because of a pretty weak holding call. And so, I mean, like, man, in total, he put up 457 all-purpose yards and 4 total touchdowns in that game. Granted, Vandy's pass defense was ranked 118th last year. They were not good. But Ashton Daniels did have the most passing yards against them the entire season. And that includes Tennessee, who had a top 10 passing offense. Alabama, who was top 30 in passing offense and had an NFL draft pick at quarterback. You know, obviously, and the one thing I'll say with that is, like, obviously teams are allowed to get better from year to year, which we always talk about.
Yep.
But I went and looked back, man, and last year, six teams on this year's schedule ranked 100th or below in pass defense last year, and four of those were below 118th where Vandy was. So, you know, he wasn't as dynamic against a better defense like Alabama. He still did pretty good had they not have dropped seven of his passes. But he lit Vanderbilt up. And so I think it's hard to really just say we're going to go off one game sample set, because we're going to talk about the Kentucky game here in just a second. But, man, the point is you saw it. Right. You saw what he can be. Yep. That Vanderbilt defense isn't going to be that much worse than some of the ACC defenses you're going to see. Right. I think of the competition that they're playing week in and week out. If he can do that, if that is in there and you can get that out of him consistently.
Right.
That'll win you some games. Now, I know they lost that game, but Auburn's defense was gutter trash last year.
Yeah.
But man, and they should have won that game, if I'm being honest. But like, dude, if he can do that, if you can, you at least you see that type of performance exists inside of him. So if you can just get that out of him consistently, man, I think he can do some things.
Right. Well, absolutely. I think one of the highlights for me was a lot of what we saw in that Vanderbilt game was a game plan where it was, hey, you got one read. You don't need to sit back there too long. You got one read. If it's not there, go. And I think early on, a lot of that game, that's what was working for them. Now, obviously, as Vandy started coming back, they had to get to a little bit more complicated stuff, which made them sit and hold the ball a little bit longer. But I thought early on, I don't know who their offensive coordinator, I think it's, what is his name? They fired him, the head coach there. He's calling the plays.
I think Hugh Freeze was fired by that time.
Yeah, by that time. So whoever was running, doing that, they had a really great game plan earlier. And I think that is actually a insight into what I think Mike Norvell might look to do with Ashton early is when we need to throw early, let's make it one read. They ran a lot of what is called RPO glance in that game. Basically, if just to make it dumbed down for you, is it's you put it in the running back's stomach and you're reading a linebacker, either the Will, that outside linebacker, or the middle, that Sam or Mike, I'm sorry, one of those linebackers you're reading. If that linebacker sucks up to stop the run, you have a wide receiver that's coming behind that running back or behind that linebacker on a post route, usually, which is a up and in into the field route. And a lot of those plays was just RPO glances. Like, he's looking up, seeing if that linebacker comes in. It's a one read. If it's there, throw it. If it's not, give it, right? Give it to the running back. Other than that, the other stuff that was really good was it's a drop back. It's a 5-yard hitch route. So hitch routes are just up routes, and then they're turning right back to the quarterback, either in or out, or it's inside dig routes, which are up and then through the middle of the field. If it's not there, then he's running. Early on in that game, I thought those were great game plans. I think you might see a lot of that being used by Mike Norvell and his offense as well to help Ashton kind of get in rhythm. Man, I just thought that, obviously, yes, Auburn's defense was poo-poo. They should have won that game. Vanderbilt defense wasn't anything to write home about, but Vanderbilt was a top-ranked team. It was on the road. He had all the pressure, and he showed up in some of the best ways that you saw. And I think this is a notch of a positive to him. Now, obviously, we'll talk about that Kentucky game.
Yeah. But
I thought, hey, you've seen some flashes of brilliance from this guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was actually, like you said, it's a lot of read and run and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, man, like, he was actually relatively, like, surgical.
Yeah.
When you're talking about, you know, passes that were within, like, that kind of 10-yard range and things like that, man. I mean, he was pretty darn good. Like, I was just going to kind of look it up here. And, I mean, he had between 0 and 10 yards in that game. He had an 86.4% completion percentage.
That's not bad. So,
I mean, he was surgical in about 10 yards. It's really, when you look at Ashton Daniels, it's kind of when you start to get past that about 15 to 20-yard mark that things get a little hairy.
Right.
But, I mean, he can make kind of that short to intermediate throws. He's actually not bad at that.
Right, right.
And so, really, we just, like I said, we wanted to look at the best of Ashton Daniels. That's probably, that's, you know, that'll go down as the Ashton Daniels game in his career. That's his career game, right? So we wanted to focus on that because that's the positive and all that too. But you also have to look at the flip side of like, well, what could you also see out of Ashton Daniels? And that was the Kentucky game. Now, it was definitely not his best game, but here's what I did see, right? It was his first start at Auburn, and he did not look comfortable to start with. Like you saw, I watched a lot of times where he would look at the sideline and kind of shake his hands and be like, you know, what are we doing? What are we supposed to be doing? And anytime you switch quarterbacks, and because that was the first, you know, now in the the Arkansas game, Jackson Arnold played the first half. He played the second half. So he had played, but he had not started. And so I think when you get in that flow, things just weren't really jiving a whole lot. Hugh Freeze was still calling the plays. And, you know, I think that was just a little bit different on the offense. They were able to do some things different once he got fired. But the one thing I noticed more than anything, for as bad as Kentucky was last year, you know, they typically have a decent defense, at least with Mark Stoops, who's not there anymore. But Auburn had zero ability to block Kentucky that game. It was snap the ball, open the floodgates almost immediately. And I mean, in that game, 50% of his dropbacks were under pressure. Literally 50% of his dropbacks. I did see even the broadcasters mention on the game replay there that the backup center was playing in that game, and he was 17 years old and the youngest starting offensive lineman in the country last year. And a lot of the pressure, as you talked about before, straight up the middle, because it was either he just was too young and couldn't stop him, or he like read the wrong guy and let someone come right through. So, man, I mean, to me, that was the biggest story of that game, because at the same time, like, he was credited with five throwaways in that game and one drop. So his, you know, I think his overall completion percentage was like high 40s in that game. His adjusted completion percentage that PFF shows, which accounts for drops and throwaways, was 63.6%, which is not bad at all. It's just the pressure forced him to get rid of the ball a lot, because he was trying not to give the game away. And, you know, this is a guy that has a history of turnover, so he's trying not to turn the ball over. The other thing was, it shows you how much they struggled to block that offensive line, was they really couldn't get the run game going either. They averaged 2.95 yards per carry in that game. It was one of their worst games all season. Auburn quarterbacks, because Jackson Arnold did play a couple series in that game as well, they were sacked seven times that night against Kentucky. And there were a few scrambles where, you know, you run back to the line of scrimmage, you get tackled for 1 yard a gain, and it doesn't count as a sack. They probably should have been credited with about nine sacks in that game, which is really ridiculous. And again, the thing is, like, going into the fourth quarter, they put, because they were down 10-3, they put in Jackson Arnold. Hugh Freeze even said in the interview, like, we're just going to put Jackson in to try and get a spark. Things didn't get any better.
No, they did not.
I think he got two or three series, and then they yanked him and put Ashton Daniels back in the game. And so, I mean, when you look at sack-adjusted rushing yards, he still put Ashton Daniels still put up 80 rushing yards on them when you don't count sacks. So he was still running all over him. It was just, man, from a passing standpoint, they just could not block Kentucky, and that was a big part of it. Now, again, I'm not saying that Ashton Daniels had a great game or whatever, but between first start, Hugh Freeze still calling the plays, and who obviously got fired for a reason, and, you know, because the offense was putrid, and then, you know, just the pressure that he faced, and really they struggled to run the ball, so he had to throw it. I'm not excusing him from the Kentucky game, but I'm saying there's a couple of asterisks that you can put beside that Kentucky game and be like, okay, well, you know, man, 50% of your dropbacks were under pressure. What are you supposed to do?
Man, listen, I you might put a few asterisks. I might just put one big one with flashing red lights. When you go back, I wrote in my notes here, there's a play. I'm laughing about it now, just even thinking about it. There's a play where I think the Auburn is on their 30-yard line. It's first down. Literally, the ball is barely out of that 17-year-old center's hand. I mean, barely. And the D tackle blows up the center, okay, number 61, the Auburn 17-year-old, blew him up. I don't mean just like blew him up like he just moved him. I mean, like, blew him up like, you know, when you sit down on the toilet and that first drop, like, boom, just blow him up. I mean, he just blew him up. Ashton is throwing the ball with his head facing his own end zone, and he's throwing the ball.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, that's how bad that offensive line was. That's how bad that center was. I mean, all night he faced pressure after pressure after pressure after pressure. I mean, they're biting at his ankles. He's running around for his dear life. Now, Mark Stoops tends to run this 4-3 zone defense. He's very zone heavy. Brad White was his defensive coordinator at the time at Kentucky. And so they ran, they just sat back. Those DBs just sat back. The linebackers sat back because they knew they had an advantage along the defensive line. And that's all they did all night was just get after him. So for me, yes, that Kentucky game was absolutely terrible. He made some bad throws in that game. But I'm going to ask for that because the fact was he was seeing ghosts all night.
Yeah.
All night. And they were rushing just four. I don't know what their blitz percentage was. I mean, you'd have to look it up for me. But, man, I can't believe I imagine it had to be low that they were sending more than five more often than they were just sending four. I mean, it was constantly in the backfield of what they were seeing. And I just think when you look at that, when you put that all together, yes, he didn't make a lot of great throws in that game. Yes, he held on the ball maybe a couple times a little bit too long. But for the most part, those defensive linemen were in his face all night.
Yeah, you remember like when we used to watch Jameis and he would do the Boston College game when he hit Rashad Green right before halftime,
yes,
right down the
end. Yes.
But it was one where like, oh, he's sacked. Oh, yep. No, he's not. And he's back out of the pocket or what. Like Ashton Daniels had to do that every single play,
yes,
during that game, just about. I mean, at least half the play. So it's just what are you supposed to do in
exactly.
that? Now again, like he's not still not a great we're not trying to excuse every mistake he's ever made because he's made a lot of mistakes, but you can kind of give him some grace with that as well, yeah. right? Now, yeah. granted, you got to hold up your end of the deal this year. In Tallahassee, right? You have to be able to give him some time to actually sit back there and make that one or two right. reads that he's going to be asked to make. And now moving on to the Bama game, again, I could only find the condensed game, so I didn't get to watch every single snap of that. But to not drag on about the film, it was just a lot of the same stuff, man. Yeah. There were some highs in there. There were some lows in there. There was some like, man, what was that throw? There was some like, oh, wow, look at that throw. Like there's a couple times where he split some defenders. There's some times where he'll put it in a tight window. There's some times where he hits a beautiful back shoulder ball. It's just, it's got to be more consistent, right? And that was a much better defense, too, when you talk about Alabama versus Dave Vanderbilt, where you could see the receivers were struggling to get a little bit of separation, and he had to force it into tight windows. But again, man, like dropping seven passes in that game, he still put up like 280 passing yards. He still had 373 all-purpose yards. You know, Tommy against Alabama in that first game put up only 232 all-purpose yards. So he put up 100 and basically 40 more yards all-purpose than Tommy did against Alabama. So, man, I mean, had they not dropped seven passes, he probably puts up over 400 all-purpose yards on Alabama's defense. Whew. And so, like, again, man, you could see that. You know, I think he was like 6 of 8 for 77 yards against Arkansas. He did pretty good in that one. And then the Kentucky game happened. They couldn't block him up front. But the thing was, as he got more comfortable throughout the season, you know, and he didn't get that Mercer game. Like he didn't get, let's give him that too. Like at Auburn, he didn't get a cupcake game to come out and get in rhythm with. Like he's not going to get New Mexico State to open up the season at Auburn. He didn't get that. He'll get that at Florida State. He'll get a game to kind of get in rhythm before he faces SMU, who, by the way, last year had 135th ranked pass defense. So that could be something to watch there as well. So it's just when you saw him get more comfortable throughout the season at Auburn, you saw him take that jump. And even the Clemson game from 2024, and this will be the last one I'll talk about. I'll kick it back to you for any other games that you watch. Like, they were moving the ball up and down the field. They actually outgained Clemson for most of that game until it came off the rails. He just made some bad decisions that led to two interceptions in the first quarter. One of them, the receiver couldn't get separation. It should have been a corner route in the end zone. It was there. He waited too long because there was pressure in his face. Turned into a pick. The other one, he was trying to throw it out of bounds and didn't throw it far enough. And it just got picked off. Those are the things that you got to get better at. But again, we're talking about a team that could not get separation, and he was under pressure a lot. So again, man, when you get back to Ashton Daniels, you know, you can see that if you give him time and you give him good receivers to work with, he can actually do some things. He can be better than people expect. Right. But again, he's still got to do it consistently, and he's still got some things he's got to clean up in his pass game.
Right. Yeah. This is all about consistency. I mean, you've watched the same stuff that I've watched as well too. It comes down to, can he clean up those mistakes? Can he cut down on the turnovers? Can he improve his deep ball? And can he be the kind of runner that we know him to be? This is a guy, Jesse, who led his high school team to 3 straight championships.
Yeah. At Buford too. I mean, Buford's no joke.
Exactly. He knows how to win. So In high school. Yes, I get it. Yes, yes, yeah, that's true.
Buford High School could probably beat Stanford. I mean, we can, but they probably
we can. They probably could beat us. But the guy knows how to win. So if he can continue to improve upon the success and improvement that we saw, you know, in those games against Alabama, against Vanderbilt, if he can make those more consistent than what we saw against Kentucky, then yeah, he could be the kind of guy that doesn't win you a national championship, but doesn't cost you games. That's really what Florida State needs, because they're going to need to lean on that running game. So you need a quarterback who can change the numbers, as they say, right? He can change the numbers with his running ability, and he can do just enough in the passing game to keep defense honest, so that you can have some success.
Yeah, I mean, again, I know it was at home versus on the road, and Alabama was way better at home than on the road. But again, like, people, you know, look at that Alabama game. Oh, we're going to get smacked in that one or whatever. Like, man, that was 27-20, and had exactly. That running back not have duped that ball up in the air, like, you know, we like punts to bounce off our head. Like, had they not have done that, they were driving to potentially tie that game or take the lead. I forget the exact score, what it was at the time, but man, that was a one score game, and that was Ashton Daniels leading that offense in that one. So, you know, again, man, as we get to kind of some final overall thoughts here, we're going to talk about some of our main concerns, some season goals we'd like to see them hit, and the rest of the room. We're going to get into that now. So, man, when I just kind of look at everything that we talked about and kind of bringing it home here for Ashton Daniels, like, look, man, again, we've said this 100 times. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Ashton Daniels is some great quarterback.
Right.
But he's a good runner, and he's elevated his floor, in my opinion, from what we saw at Auburn. What we saw at Auburn is night and day. Hey. It wasn't perfect, but night and day different than what we saw at Stanford. I mean, again, at Stanford, to your point, he threw 20 picks in 2 years, 3.7% of his passes. I think it was 600 total attempts. 3.7% of his passes got picked off. At Auburn last year, a much smaller sample size at 122 passes, but that number dropped to 1.6%. And again, as we mentioned, the two interceptions were not even on him.
Right.
Neither one of those was his fault. The other, you know, so you look at the interception percentage went down. His turnover-worthy play rate, which is something that PFF calculates, basically where you put the ball in danger, doesn't necessarily mean it gets picked off, but it probably should have been. His turnover-worthy play rate went down. His fumbles per carry percentage, because you have to, you know, with a different size workload, you got to do percentages here to even things out. That went down considerably from 6.1% at Stanford to 1.85% at Auburn. So he was much better with taking care of the ball at Auburn. And that is the one thing that he has to do well at Florida State. If he does nothing else, he has to take care of the football. Meanwhile, his QBR also went up considerably from 49.9 at Stanford in 24 to 67.9 at Auburn in 25. And sack-adjusted rushing yards, because again, I like to use sack-adjusted for quarterbacks, he was top 15 in yards per carry among quarterbacks with at least 50 carries in the Power Four last year, and he was top 10 the year before that. 5 of his last 14 starts over the past 2 seasons, because I don't count Arkansas because he only played a half there, he rushed for over 100 sack-adjusted yards. And I think the Clemson game was 90, and he had another one at 80. Dude, he is a legitimate runner. Like, that is one thing that you really got to focus on. I mean, he is, like, I don't want to call him Cam Newton, but he's, when you see him at Auburn, he's kind of that Cam Newton-esque runner, man. Like, he is a tough power runner. And I'm going to talk about a little bit that more in a second. But, man, I just really think, like, if you can get the Auburn version of him, we might have something. If you get the Stanford version, we're in trouble. And Mike's probably getting fired, and then we'll get the new coach we want anyway. So I think it's kind of a win-win either way, right? I just think you have to know what Ashton Daniels is and what he isn't. And what he is not is a quarterback who is going to get the ball out super quick. He's going to progress through 3 or 4 reads. He's going to pick defenses apart. He's going to hit tight windows and wow you with his arm. That's not what Ashton Daniels is. That's not his game.
Nope.
What he is a quarterback who can move the pocket. He can evade pressure. He can buy time for receivers to get open. He can deliver the ball well in that kind of 0 to 15 yardish range, that short to mid range. He's got actually a pretty strong arm. It's just the accuracy downfield kind of wanes a little bit. And man, again, back to my point a second ago, he's a really good runner. And I don't mean like a gimmicky runner like Tommy, where it's just electric and you know, one little thing and he loses that kind of electric ability and he's just not the same. Like, man, Ashton Daniels, he's got he's more of a consistent power runner, and he's got size to be durable. What we say, 6'2", 230. Yep. He's hard to bring down. He consistently sheds defenders. He can create something out of a busted play. Like, watching him run as a quarterback makes me pretty darn excited because, man, I mean, he tears defenses up. And, you know, again, this is a twofold thing here where, like, when he's able to run, those DBs can never turn their back and get comfortable, which is going to allow the receivers to do more work downfield because they know, like, okay, we're like 2-3 seconds now. He's probably taking off. I should probably turn around and catch this quarterback.
That's right.
And I mean, when I tell you he's a daggone good runner, like, he is going to impress you with his run skills because he is powerful. A lot of times, you know, he'll get to the edge on a quarterback power or something like that. And it's just like shoving defenders off of him left and right, man. He's impressive to watch run. I can't wait to see it. But, you know, again, man, like, the Stanford history is still there. And all that, the turnover problems and all that stuff are still in the back of our minds. And that's what we're going to think about when we see Ashton Daniels. But again, the film that both you and I watched at Auburn, man, if you can give him time in the pocket, if you can pair him with a good ground game so he doesn't have to do too much, if his receivers can actually get open and then catch the ball,
right,
man, I think he can be better than we're giving him credit for. I think he can be better than the 12th or 10th best quarterback in the ACC. Now, we're going to get to concerns in just a second. But, you know, again, man, when you look at the total package and you just go into this knowing this is not who Ashton Daniels is, so I'm not going to expect that. This is who he is, and I expect that. And if we can just see him build on what he did at Auburn last year, use his power running game, and just improve a little bit in passing. And that's going to come with a better offensive line play if you get it, and good receivers and a good ground game so he doesn't have to do everything. There's no reason he can't have a decent season.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, here's the thing. Here's what I would say. I got three quick things. I think number one, well, I have four things. Number one, he has comeback ability in his DNA. There was a game against Colorado in 2023 where he threw for 396 yards and 4 touchdowns with Stanford. He rallied Stanford, guys, from a 29-0 halftime deficit to win in double overtime. The dude is a gamer. If he has the right kind of, again, as we talked about a lot, offensive line and wide receiver and running back around him, he's a gamer. He obviously, Jesse has mentioned this multiple times, he gives FSU a real QB run threat. He ran for 669 yards in 2024. Now, here's the thing. He only ran for 280 yards in 4 games at Auburn, but that's 70-yard average. So if you multiply that by 12, that could have potentially, if he stayed on average, 840 yards he could have ran if he had played all 12 games at Auburn. And the reason why I'm saying this matters is because, man, Norvell wants to run his quarterback at FSU. That's what we've seen a lot of success in. When DJ and Tommy Castellanos couldn't run, that's when we've seen the offense suffer. Also, Ashton has played a lot of football. Okay, he has 37 games, as Jesse mentioned, 23 starts, right? He's played in ACC. He's played in the SEC. He's played in bad offensive line. He's played in road environments and ugly game calling. He has experience. So you would hope that with that and Mike Norvell, they can actually begin to put that together. Obviously, he's played in some really big games. Alabama, Vandy, ranked Vandy on the road. Obviously, played against Clemson at when he was at Stanford. So those are the things that I think that if Mike can cater the offense where, yes, he's taking maybe 4 to 5 deep shots a game, but they've been set up because they've been having a lot of these RPO glances and these one read things and these taken runs, he's getting around the running back. Like you said, one of the things around the offensive line, one of the things I love is that he's not just powerful. He's sneaky elusive.
He's not gonna
juke you in a phone book like, you know, maybe Tommy could when he was healthy. But, man, he's got a little bit of elusiveness that if you just think you're gonna go straight head on, he'll take you head on and it'll be a wreck between you and him.
Yeah.
But he can also maybe in a little ways, he's got a little wiggle to him. So that is also something that I look at as these are positive things for him. Obviously, we will get to the concerns, but these are the positive things I see for him that if Mike can pull that out of him, if his QB guy and Austin Tucker, who works with the QBs and stuff like that, if they can make that work, then I think we could see a decent improvement for his play.
Yeah, I agree, man. And like you said, I mean, there's times where like if he gets open, like in space, I mean, he's covering ground quick. It can be a 10, 14, 15 yard run before you know it. But yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that there's a lot to work with there. Now, again, as we said 100 times, like there's a lot of stuff that you're going to go, oh no, I don't know that I like this. But again, man, it's just the experience and it's the things that he brings to the table that if you can maximize that, he can be okay. We're not saying he's going to be Jordan Travis or Jameis Winston or Jaden Daniels or anything like that. We're not going to say that, but he can be better than DJU. He can be better than what Tommy was. You know, Tommy was kind of like, he was consistently average. Ashton Daniels has been way more up and down and up and down. He's had some really high highs, some really low lows. And you know, that Colorado team that you talked about, there was a certain DB on that team named Travis Hunter that got burnt a few times in that game. And so now let's move on to our concerns, right? Because this is one that, you know, it's just, it's going to be there, man. There is no way around it. There are going to be some concerns. There are going to be some things that you're going to be worried about with him being at quarterback, right? Because there's the history of some things where, like, yeah, you're going to lean on the run game and things like that, but there's also some concerns, right? And my biggest concern is obviously what probably everybody else feels, and that's the turnovers. I have three main concerns we're going to get to. The biggest is the turnovers, right? Now, we've talked a lot about them already, so I'm not going to go too deep into this, but as we've already discussed, he did get a lot better about taking care of the ball at Auburn last year, so I don't expect him to be as efficient as, say, Jordan Travis was, but it can't be anything like it was at Stanford,
right?
If you can have the 1.85% fumble rate or something like that, what I said earlier, if you can have a 1.6% interception rate like he did at Auburn, and again, neither one of those was on him, you can get by with that. And we're going to talk about where we want him to be when we get to our season goals section, but that is my one biggest concern, is the turnovers. Now, my second biggest concern, and I know you probably share the turnover concern as well, the second concern I definitely know that we both share, and that is the deep ball. My second biggest concern about Ashton Daniels is his ability to push the ball down the field effectively and take advantage of a guy like Deuce, right? 61% of his passes at Auburn were under 10 yards. It was in the same ballpark as Stanford, but they did ask him to push the ball downfield a little bit more, and that's where he got into trouble. 70% of his interceptions came in 37% of his passes, and those were on passes of 10 yards or more. So again, you can see, and that's really, guys, that goes for just about any quarterback. Obviously, you're going to be more inaccurate when you throw the deep ball than you do, you know, a 5-yard route or something like that. But the deep ball is really where he gets in trouble, right? That's where he kind of, the accuracy wanes and stuff like that. So you just really kind of can't ask him to do that. And here's some numbers to kind of prove what I'm saying. So you can break down throws by distance on PFF, and his deep ball, which is 20 yards or more, his deep ball completion percentage last year was 66 of 92 power four quarterbacks. Now, I put like a snap, a attempt percentage filter and all this on this, so you're not getting like a guy who threw one deep pass or whatever. So I do like a 20% filter on this. But his deep ball completion percentage was 66 of 92 power four quarterbacks. That's not good. Okay. His big time throw rate, which is basically dropping it in a bucket 20 yards downfield, was 50th. But his turnover-worthy play percentage, which we talked about earlier, which is where he puts the ball in danger, was third highest in the country. So you can tell his deep ball is just not a strength. Now, 2024, he was 88th of 97 in completion percentage, 81st in big-time throw rate, and 20th in turnover-worthy play percentage. And 23 was the same thing, 59th, 67th, and 17th. So clearly, the deep ball is not his strength, and that is something that we share. Now, when you talk about Mike Norvell, in 22 and 23, because I want to focus on the positive seasons, because that's what we're going for. We're not going for 2-10, right? We're going for the 22 and 23 type of seasons. They really, really liked the mid-range passing between 10 and 19 yards. Jordan Travis threw the ball 30.6% of the time in that mid-range window in 22 and 26.5% of the time in 2023. Ashton Daniels has never thrown it over 20% of the time in that range. And arguably his best year last year at Auburn was his lowest percentage at 13.1%. So, you know, Mike's going to need to cut that number down a little bit. You're going to have to play to his strength. Jordan Travis averaged about 17% deep passes over 20 yards, which is a little bit higher than what Daniels has done as well. And with Jordan Travis, we also did see a significantly higher percentage of screens where he was at 17.3% in 22, 22.3% in 23, and Ashton Daniels was at just 6.5% screens last year. So again, if Mike Norvell knows for a fact that he can, if he's wise enough, and that's questionable sometimes, if he's wise enough to say, look, man, this is what he's good at. This is what he's not, right? Jordan was extremely efficient with the ball, nailing that mid-range passing. He was great at deep passing. That's what his strengths were. If you can say, okay, I know from about behind the line of scrimmage screens and things like that, I know that about 0 to 15 yards, Ashton Daniels can really be successful. I think that's what we need to hone in on. You can set him up for success. But if you start asking him to throw the deep ball like Tommy did, you know, and if you look at where, and I'll get to this in a minute, but like if you ask him to do what Tommy did last year in Gus's offense, if you ask him to do all these things, because, man, like what does all this mean that we're talking about right now? Like if you play to his strengths and don't ask him to do the things he's not good at, if you can give him time, if they don't ask him to carry the offense on his back, he can be a decent quarterback, you know, better than what we've had in the last 2 years. And I know he has Deuce, who's a deep ball specialist. But I just think the offense is going to need to look a little bit different this year, man. Right. Last year, to your point that you mentioned earlier, was very much a spray and pray offense, right? You just throw it deep and hope that Deuce can go up and get it. Tommy last year, 50% of his passes were over 10 yards, with 23% being over 20 yards. Ashton Daniels last year was at 26.2% on 10-plus yards and 13.1% on 20-plus yards. So literally half as often he threw the ball deep as Tommy did last year because, again, it was just throw it up and hope for the best last year. Right. So if you can back it off a little bit, and in my opinion, this year needs to be more of a chain-moving, drive-sustaining offense that hits the big plays when the opportunity arises. Don't force it. Don't just throw jump balls to Deuce every other play. I think if you combine that with a good ground game and some solid receivers and a decent offensive line, I think he can do what you need him to do. You just can't ask him to do things he's not good at. You can't ask him to throw it 23% of his passes downfield. You can't ask him to throw 30% in that mid-range like Jordan Travis. Right. You've got to play to his strengths and lean on that running game. And one last thing I will mention before I throw it back to you that I did have a note on here was that Auburn did run tempo offense last year. And we know Mike Norvell likes to run tempo offense this year. So that is one thing that he's used to as well. So, man, it's really about when you talk about that deep ball being a weakness, it's about knowing that, identifying that, and not asking him to do things he's not good at.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, here's the thing. My concerns, So a quarterback takes about, on average last year, a quarterback is looking at about 106 snaps per game, okay? My number one concern is that if you look at Ashton Daniels' career, he's had about 1,500 snaps, give or take, somewhere in there. 1,500 snaps. And he's had 38 total turnovers on those snaps.
That's a lot.
38 in 1,500 snaps. You would think, well, that's not a lot. That is 2.5% of his snaps he has turned the ball over. If you break that down per game, that means every 40 snaps, he's turning the ball over. So if you're averaging about 106 snaps a game, right, that means he's averaging almost close to 2.5 to 3 turnovers per game.
Yeah.
That is a major problem. Yep. And it's not just the interceptions. It's the 16 career fumbles. For a guy who has to run the ball, who's going to be dependent upon him running the ball a lot, you do not want him fumbling the ball. That's why earlier we talked about that, or in the pre-show, we said, hey, man, he can't have more than 10 turnovers completely. That's fumbles and interceptions per game. So that's obviously, as we talked about, that's my number one concern about Ashton Daniels. He's got to maintain the ball. He's got to carry the rock and make sure he keeps it safe. Number two, as you talked about, is the deep ball consistency in Mike Norvell's offense. He wants to throw the ball deeper. He talked about coming out of the springtime that one of the reasons why he got the job was because his deep ball has improved. We'll see what that actually looks like. But Mike Norvell wants to take those vertical shots. And this offense, and if we're going to try to keep them clean and keep them honest in the run game, we got to be able to hit some deep shots down the field. That's going to be big as important. I think the other concern is that he's a productive quarterback, but he's not dominant efficiently as a quarterback, right? So he has a, you know, 60.2% completion percentage, but his career yards per attempt sits at around 6.6, which means he's a dink and dunk quarterback. That's where he thrives in, is dinking and dunking. Just like I talked about, those one read RPO glance shots where he's just looking at, you know, five to eight yard range down the field. He's not taking a lot of deep shots because it hasn't been his strength. In this type of offense, if you're going to run the ball a lot, you have to be not good efficiency. You have to be almost close to elite efficiency. And that's a huge concern for me going into the season with Ashton Daniels.
Yeah. And Jordan Travis, that was what, that was his calling card. He was extremely efficient with the ball.
Yes.
And so that's to your point, man, you can't have 2.5 turnovers a game. No. You just can't. That's how you lose games. So really, and if they, if he improved on the deep ball and a guy like Deuce can go get it, man, take advantage of it by all means. But if it starts looking like turnovers here and there, then you got to play. You got to let them dink and dunk and run the ball and then take shots when they open up. Deuce is going to get open for some deep balls. You're going to throw them. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. You just can't ask him to do things that, that he's not good at. So you can take advantage of Deuce. You can take advantage of the deep ball getting better, but you can't do things. You just can't ask him to do things he's not good at. Now, one thing I did want to touch on real quick that I was looking up, that I wanted to look up last, not last year at Auburn, because he didn't play a full season. The season before that at Stanford, of quarterbacks in the Power Four, he was number 8 in runs of 10 yards or more. Wow. So again, back to the point I was talking about, the dude can run, right? But my last concern here real quick that I want to get into before we talk about season goals for Ashton Daniels, man, it's just, and this goes kind of against what you said from him at high school, the high school level, but again, that's totally different, is he's just not been a proven winner. You know, I understand a lot of that has to do with the fact of he's been on bad teams, right? Stanford, since the McCaffrey days, has not really been a winning team. And last year, I mean, so far, his team records have been 3-9, 3-9, and 5-7, right? There's just something to be said about having a guy at that position that knows how to win. You know, Jameis Winston, what, I think he lost one game like that all the way until he got to the NFL, and even high school was crazy record. So, like, there's just something about a guy who's a proven winner and can, you know, rally the guy and say, hey man, I've been here and we won. Like, you kind of can't say that. And so that's the thing, that one of the things that in the back of my mind that does worry me a little bit there. So now let's talk about some season goals here as we get ready to kind of wrap up Ashton Daniels, and then we'll do a quick hit on the rest of the room here. Man, when I look at 2026, for us to be successful with Ashton Daniels at quarterback, just using his averages, and this kind of play on what you said earlier, just using his averages from the three games he started at Auburn, not counting the Arkansas game because he only played a half there. And do keep in mind, he did miss two full drives at Kentucky. And he also didn't get any cupcake games to pad his stats. Like, that's a big thing, too, when you're averaging things. Like, Tommy, I think he threw for over 300 yards one time last year or something like that. It was against nobody, right? That's when you could light some stuff up. But anyway, just using his game averages, and this is not an exact science, but it's to your point that you mentioned earlier, he was on pace to put up around 3,850 all-purpose yards. That's around 2,880 passing and around 980 rushing if you look at what he was putting up from sack-adjusted numbers.
Right.
That's why I think yours was a little bit lower because, I mean, the man got sacked a lot.
Right.
So for me, my goal, I would really just – I'm not asking you to be a world beater. I'm not asking you to throw for 4,000 yards or anything crazy like that. What I think – needs to happen for us to be successful in 2026, and I mean like 8-9 wins successful, right? I would really like to see him hit about 3,500 all-purpose yards, which I think is doable. Okay. And I'm looking at that from about 2,800 pass yards and about 700 rushing yards. That's kind of what I'm looking at. That breaks down to around 233 pass yards a game. That's not asking a lot. And around 58.3 rush yards per game. That's not asking a lot either, because he has averaged over that number in rushing two out of his three seasons, but he's also averaged under that in passing all three seasons. So in essence, he just really needs to do what he's been doing the entire time as a runner, but he needs to improve on his passing. On scoring, I'd like to see him hit about 25 all-purpose touchdowns, about 20 through the air, which he's never done, and about 5 rushing. Because believe it or not, man, as good of a runner as he is, he's never scored more than 3 rushing touchdowns in a season.
In a season.
So I would really like to see him hit about 25 total all-purpose touchdowns, 20 through the air, 5 on the ground. You know, I think if you can do that, I think you can be productive enough with a good ground game with Trey Wisner and Chrome and all them. I think you can get where you want to be. And the one biggest thing, we talked about this in the pre-show, you mentioned it earlier, probably the biggest and most important goal for the entire season is to keep it under 10 total turnovers. And it's kind of funny that we were talking in the pre-show, we literally, you said it before, even I did, we had the same exact number, yep. Right? That includes interceptions and fumbles. I know that probably still sounds like a lot, but I don't expect the man to not have any Correct. Turnovers. He's probably going to need to carry the ball 100-plus times this season.
Right.
It's going to happen, right? It's going to happen. So if you can keep it under 10, single-digit interceptions, added on a couple of fumbles there, man, if you can hit those numbers, I think you'd be surprised at how good this offense can be when the dust settles at the end of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I'm a little bit more adjusted to the run game. So I was thinking, like, if he could have about 3,500 yards, total all-purpose yards, where 2,500 of that is through the air, that's about 208 yards per game, because I think they're going to have to really lean on this run game. Yeah. I would like for him to have about 1,000 yards on the season running. That's about 83 yards average per game. So because they're going to have to run him a lot. I mean, we just – I don't know what this offensive line, I trust Herb Hand, but I don't know what it looks like just yet. And he's not that great of a passer. He's going to dink and dunk. Like, we already know that. Like, we just walked through his whole MO. Like, that's the kind of passer he is. His efficiency level is around 6.6 yards average per throw. He's going to be a dink and dunker. But what you're hoping is that he gets 1 to 2. What I was going to say is that what I would love for his completion percentage on the season to be is around that 60%.
Yeah,
can he get to his career average around 60%, which would mean that his deep ball completion percentage has to be low 50s. Okay. It cannot be in the 30s or the, yeah, or low 40s,
which 50% is really high.
50% is really high, but can he, if they're taking 1 to 4 shots per game, that means completing at minimum 2 deep balls per game. And a deep ball is 20 yards or more down the field, okay? So can he complete at minimum two deep balls per game, which would get his deep ball completion percentage on the season at least around that really high 40s, super low 50s. If he can do that, I mean, you look back at Jordan Travis's in the 2023 year, I believe he was at
45% in 22 and 31 in 23. But we dropped a lot of passes,
and we had Keon Coleman in 23, which was ridiculous, yeah, right? So if he can be at that 45% range, man, think about what that could do to the run game. That's why I need his run game numbers to be up. I know it's Disneyland dream that he could be close to that 50% completion percentage down the field. But if he could be somewhere around there, which means he's taking 1 to 2 shots per game, or I'm sorry, 2 to 4 shots per game, and he, yeah, could be about 2, I think that could be that. Obviously, you talked about the turnover rate. He has to be below 10. That's going to be the conversation starter and ender if he gets above that 10 mark.
Yeah, and again, I want to remind everybody that these projections are what we need to be successful,
exactly, right?
Because I want to say, I think it was 2022 that I projected something similar for Jordan Travis. I think I was only like 100 yards off on, mm-hmm, what I said I would like to see him do, and we won 10 games. So, exactly, like, if you want to get where you want to be, that's what we're talking about. That doesn't, right, mean he's going to hit these numbers.
Correct.
This is what we need him to do if he's going to be successful. And to your point, they can lean heavily on the run game as well. Now, to close this episode out, we are going to talk about the rest of the room, because we do have some other names on the roster that, one, I would like to see get playing time this year, and two, may end up playing, because Ashton Daniels is probably, as I said, going to have to run the ball over 100 times this year. There could be, right, times where he gets banged up. There could be times where, you know, he misses time or whatever it is. Or if the season goes off the rails, maybe you just throw somebody in to try and create a spark. If he turns out to be the Stanford Ashton Daniels that, right, we saw, then, because, I mean, again, we just talked about what he can be. There's still a possibility that he could be Stanford Ashton Daniels. Right. And so we're going to talk about those guys as well. And I'm going to start with Kevin Sperry, because I think he is quarterback number 2 right now. Obviously, he's a talented dual threat. The kind of Baker Mayfield vibes when he came in from Texas, that kind of undersized dual threat guy there. Got some action in some games last year. Reportedly was in a battle with Ashton Daniels in the spring, which kind of sounds like it wasn't quite as much of a battle as we thought it was at the end of the day. But, man, he looked good when he got to play, right? Yeah. But most of his time was against lesser competition. He did not quite look the same when he had to come in relief against Stanford, which again is why I think you're going to see Ashton Daniels be the bona fide starter this year. I think that's 90% of the reason why it was always going to be Ashton Daniels, yeah, was because you just haven't seen live fire for him in a big game situation. I get it, Stanford, but Stanford's like in front of 20,000 people on the road, all that stuff. Like, you have to understand you're going to play against SMU, who's a dark horse team this year, yep, for the playoffs. You're going to have to go to Bryant-Denny in a couple of weeks early in the season. You need a guy that's been in that environment, and that's Ashton Daniels. But with that being said, I do like the quarterback room as a whole better this year and better than 24, obviously, because I like year two. And I don't really know what he's going to look like, but I like year two Kevin Sperry better than I did Brock Glenn. So right, I think you're in a better position there. I'm hoping we're not going to – I mean, if he loses to New Mexico State, we're going to get fired here. But I'm hoping it's dominant enough against New Mexico State that we will see him get some reps against New Mexico State in that first game. You know, we were talking about it before. I think you're going to have to do some load management with Ashton, yeah, Daniels this, yeah, year to keep him healthy, to be able to run the ball like you need him to. So I'm hoping, like, the first two quarters, the opening drive of the second half, you get him out and you get Malachi Marshall and Kevin Sperry some time. Really, the Central Arkansas game, man, I don't even really need to see Ashton Daniels, nope, in that game, because by that point, you'll have already played Bama and SMU and all then. So you'll see him get some time, but, you know, that's my thoughts on Kevin Sperry. I think he's a very serviceable backup, probably better than Brock Glenn was. Yeah. I hope we don't have to rely on him, but no, if we do, I feel better about that position than I have in the past few years.
Yeah, I feel so much better about bringing a Kerry Sperry into the game if you need be than we ever felt about Brock Glenn. And I remember in 24 when we were calling for Brock Glenn to start.
Brocktober, baby.
Brocktober. And then he got in there, and then it was the pumpkins.
That was a trick, not a treat.
Exactly. They went rotten real quick.
Yes, you know, they did.
And Brock, you know, I know you're like, why is he catching strays in this episode?
Yeah.
We appreciate Brock for all he did. Obviously, he was part of helping us win an ACC championship, you know, in a very terrible time there. But he wasn't FSU quality quarterback, or he was failed by his developers, which,
yeah,
probably has more to do with that than anything.
I
did like some of what I saw with Sperry when he did come into Stanford. He had moxie, he had poise. Again, he just didn't have a lot of live fire. To be fair, and Ashton Daniels, you could say a lot about this as well, too. These were Gus Malzahn-type quarterbacks. So it'll be interesting to see how they actually fit. Maybe, just maybe, if you have to go to a Sperry, he might fit a little bit better in a Mike Norvell offense. Who knows? But I agree with you. I think in that New Mexico State game, I said this in the pre-show, if you can get up 21 points, the moment you get up to 21 points, you're going to have to run him a little bit. You get him out of that game. You get Sperry in. You get Malachi Marshall in there, and you try to see, you know, what you got in there, so that if you ever have to turn to them, you kind of know what you got in this form of offense there. But I do like Kerry Sperry as the backup there.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about who potentially might be the most exciting quarterback on the roster that might not play. Now, this is my favorite quarterback on the roster. He's also a local kid to my, mm-hmm, area, so I'm cheering for him as well. Shout out South Point. So, man, I mean, when you just look at the accolades last year, led Iowa Western to a JUCO National Championship, 2025 NJCAA Offensive Player of the Year, ranked second in passing yards, first in passing touchdowns, first in passing efficiency, first team All-American at the JUCO level, number one JUCO quarterback available per 247. Personally, I think Malachi Marshall is the most talented quarterback on the roster as far as arm talent goes, who actually fits what Mike Norvell wants as a quarterback historically. He's more of that kind of Brady White guy where, mm-hmm, you know, he's mobile. He can run, mm-hmm, but he's not a dual threat quarterback, mm-hmm, by any means. He is more of a standing there and sling it. I hope we get to see him play some this year. Mm-hmm. I really do. I'd really like to know what we got in him. You know, as much as I like Kevin Sperry, I think I'd probably rather see Malachi Marshall, and that's no offense to Kevin Sperry, but man, I think there's something to this kid.
Right.
I'm telling you, if things go sideways, why not give him a chance? Right. To me, the biggest risk here are all the highlights we just talked about. were against JUCO competition, which is miles behind Power Four. That doesn't mean he can't be good at this level. That doesn't mean no JUCO quarterback has ever transitioned to this level and been good. Cam Newton was a guy that was, you know, he started at Florida, then went JUCO, then won a national championship at Auburn. I think Aaron Rodgers came from the JUCO level too. Right. Like, man, it could very well happen. And here's my thing, man. You had already taken Ashton Daniels at this point, so you pretty much knew he was going to be the starter. If Malachi Marshall were 20 pounds heavier and he were here for spring camp, because he's only 170 pounds,
right.
I think he'd probably be your starter,
right.
If I'm being honest. And so I don't think we're going to see him start this year unless things go crazy and we're just grasping at straws. But, man, I hope we get to see him play, because I think there's something to this kid. And if, you know, things are going to change, obviously, if Mike Norvell gets fired, but he could be the future if he translates from what we saw at JUCO to Power Four, and he's still here next year. Mike Norvell is here as well.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you look at this kid's highlights, whew, he's got an arm, he can read, he sees the field very well. You know, he has some mechanical things. He still kind of throws off his back foot sometimes when he's trying to sling it, when he's trying to throw with power. But, man, the guy has the just kind of the it factor. And
yeah,
like you said, if he was here during spring practice and he could have put a little weight on him, I really think there would have been a real QB competition in the mix of there. Obviously, I would love to see him get in this year. Only reason I'd want to see him get in is because we're winning and he's, you know, he gets
blowing somebody
out and he's getting in there. Obviously, if he's in the game and he's starting, that means our first two options were not good enough and we're probably already fired the coach. But I'm just saying, you know, that's where we might be at. But he's an exciting prospect. I'd love to see what they could do with him throughout this year as far as even just using him in some bait stuff, some packages or whatever, just to try to get him get on the field to see what he can do against this, you know, Power Four level of defenses there.
Yeah, I just want to know what we got. You know what I mean? And they'll know in practice. I honestly think as much as Ashton Daniels is a starter, like if he goes into fall camp,
right?
And it's just like, son, we got something.
Wow.
You're gonna have to really think about what you're doing here. Like you may have to split reps in that New Mexico State game and really think about what you're doing. But then the last one here that I just want to touch on real, real quick, and this is like break glass in case of emergency, scout team quarterback. If we get here, we're probably in big trouble, to your point. And that is Dean DeNoble. They did bring in a guy here who's going to be your depth guy. Now, he did start 35 games at Lafayette College, career completion percentage of 64.7%, 7,007 career yards, 53 touchdowns, 24 interceptions. 12 of those did come in one season. Other than that, he's been pretty good, 451 rush yards and 10 touchdowns. Obviously, that was at a lower level. He's only played two games versus Power Four, and they didn't go very great. That was Oregon State and Duke. He had 263 yards, 48.9% combined completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks. So, again, if we get here, we're in trouble, but at least he's played a ton of football. And so I think he can, you know, probably not be as bad as maybe some like a walk-on or something like if you get to that level. So, I mean, you got pretty good depth in the quarterback room this year. You know, if you get past Ashton Daniels, like, you know, we talked about before where sometimes it felt like when you step down to the next quarterback, it was a really big drop-off. I don't think it's going to be the case.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Ashton Daniels is going to be the best runner of the group. I think Malachi Marshall's probably your best passer. I think Kevin Sperry's kind of a good neutral ground on both fronts. And, you know, DeNoble's got a bunch of experience. He's probably not going to play anyway.
Right.
But, man, I feel like if you had to go quarterback one to quarterback three, I don't think there's going to be a massive drop-off. So that I do like,
right?
If things go sideways, you can put someone in, and it's not just necessarily a Hail Mary. So I do think that I like those things about the quarterback room this year. And, again, you know, to wrap this thing up, man, final thoughts here. We'll see how it looks, right?
Right.
If you put Ashton Daniels in a position to succeed, I think he can I think he can beat the expectations. I think he'd be better than the 12th best quarterback in the ACC when you look at it from a whole perspective, right? Lamar Jackson was Mike Vick. Most of us who listen to this, I know the age demographics, we're old enough to remember Mike Vick. We saw Lamar Jackson. If you were a fan of us around about 2016, you remember Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, you did. Oh, God.
So, like, those guys could sling it. But they were who they were because of their legs. So if you're talking about from a pure passing, no, Ashton Daniels is not top five in the ACC. But if you talk about whole picture, a guy who could put up 800-900 yards, 1,000 yards on the ground, man, I think he could be one of the more decent quarterbacks. I'll just leave it at that, right? I want to couch this because I don't think he's going to be great.
Yeah.
But I think he could be decent if you put him in a situation that he can succeed and don't make him carry the entire team on his back. And so, I'll end on this. I am cautiously optimistic about what he can be. And I think after really digging into the numbers, really seeing what he had to work with, and knowing that if you can get a decent offensive line, a decent run game, and some decent receivers, I'm higher on Ashton Daniels than I was before we did this episode. Right. And so I hope you guys are at least there too. Again, we're not expecting them to be perfect, but that doesn't mean I think if you can just get Auburn plus a little bit better, I think he can lead Florida State to 8-9 win. That's getting scary to say, but I think he can if the defense is good enough, right? Because he's not terrible from what I saw. I mean, again, the guy put up over 400 yards all purpose on Vandy and should have put up over 400 yards on Alabama's defense. So I'm just going to give him a chance, right? I'm not going to put him in a box and say what he can and can't do until I get to see him play. And so we'll see, man. He's got nothing left to lose. This is it for him.
Yep.
And yeah, so I hope to see him make the most of it.
Yeah, I'm the same with you. Like, I'm not even going to talk about win loss right now because just that makes me depressed just even thinking about it.
Yeah.
But what I will say is he has shown flashes of brilliance. He has shown flashes of being a gamer. He has shown flashes of being a downhill punish you with some sneaky elusiveness runner who can make accurate throws in that 5 to 10 intermediate route range, who needs to improve his deep ball. If he's working behind a decent to good offensive line, we already know that the wide receiver or the running back rooms, which we'll get to in our running back previews, and we know that our wide receivers, which we'll get to in our wide receiver previews, so make sure you tune in for those, are better than what he's had anywhere else, then I would say that he should be able to lead Florida State to decent improvement. Whether or not that translates into more wins than last year is still up for debate. But we should see at least a better comparable QB improvement from what we had the last two seasons in Ashton Daniels. That's as far as I'll go right now.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And I mean, I was just looking it up, and I hate to even use this comparison, but like, man, in 2008, when Tim Tebow won the national championship at Florida, he only threw for 2,750 yards, But he also ran for 673. So and you don't have to throw for 4,000 yards. No, now, I don't think Ashton Daniels is going to be in there. We're not going to lose or anything like that. But I'm just saying give the man a chance, and we'll see. And if it goes sideways, Mike Norvell's probably getting fired, and we're getting a new coach we all want anyway. So that's going to be it for this episode, guys. I know we ran a little bit long on this. This is by far going to be the deepest dive of all the position groups because it is so critical, and we had a lot to say on this one. So make sure you check in for the rest of those. We're going to start run through the offense, then we're going to switch to the defense. And again, it's preseason content time, guys. Right. You know, we're going to be rolling a bunch of stuff out for you guys. We've got schedule previews, final win-loss predictions. We've got ACC Media Days coming up in 3 weeks that we're going to be on location in Charlotte. Looking forward to that. So if you've listened this long, you're obviously a diehard Noel fan. Why not go ahead and lock in with us? Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, tell a friend, tell a neighbor, rate and review on the podcast would really help us reach other Noel fans. And, you know, we would be really, really grateful for that. We also have a website over at plantthespear.com that you can check out, written articles, all that kind of stuff. We got all that going for you. The new thing that we've been talking about for a long time is just days away from rolling out. So we're excited about that. We're going to do a whole little sideshow here to kind of walk you guys through that, but it's going to be something that's going to be big for the FSU fan community. So again, just another reason to lock in with us right now, because you're not going to want to miss that. And so excited about getting that rolled out for you guys before the season gets here. And Michael, that's going to do it for this one, man. We're going to hope for the best. I don't know how it's going to look, but we're going to hope for the best. Hopefully I can look back on this episode and not kind of shake my head like I did the DJU episode, but maybe it'll work out for once. We'll see.
Work out.
And hope ain't a strategy, but you know what, buddy? Right now, all I got to hang on to is
all we got. So,
with that being said, guys, we appreciate you guys watching, and we'll catch you on the next one. As always,
go Noles.
Go Noles.